Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shadmar Quits. We are your hosts again for this weekend show, and it was another busy week. I feel like I've been saying that even through these kind of summer doldrum trading sessions that we've been having, but great time to reanalyze a lot of the companies in your portfolio and to try to get an understanding of what direction the markets might go post-summer trading. Shad and I are kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. Now, Mike, when it comes to trading this time of the year, especially this year, look, markets are slow. They are range bound. I see an opportunity for short-term traders to make some money just simply trading these swings. But when it comes to big picture, what are the main themes that you are watching for these markets that might not be prevalent right now, but it could, when we all come back from summer, from the summer session, could really drive markets?
Sure. I would say, you know, the best way to sum it up is it's a LERP, ZERP, NERP world, and we're all just living in it. And if somebody's not familiar with those acronyms, it simply means low, zero, or negative interest rate policy. And I'm referencing, of course, what the Fed is doing now and is likely to continue to do in terms of the U.S. Interest rate market, as well as what we're seeing in Japan and Europe and other sort of advanced economies. I think, you know, you've seen there was a lot of freaking out going on back in the early spring about what, you know, interest rates. So now the economy is really going to upshift. We have all this fiscal stimulus being thrown at the economy. Inflation's picking up, 2% 10-year or 3% 10-year or 4% 10-year or whatever, you know, lots of crazy targets being thrown out there. But the reality is, not just the U.S. economy, but other advanced economies are still bearing. Structural issues are still demographics, you know, in terms of less immigration, lower birth rates and so on. All these things combine to basically put a lid on how far interest rates can rise before it, for lack of a better term, breaks the economy. So what we've seen is basically, you know, in the last several months, really since late spring, early summer, we've seen interest rates drift lower and now start to fall a little faster. We have, you know, negative yields across the bond curve in places like Germany. We have the U.S. 10-year that's been getting, you know, precipitously close to 1% again after being up at 1.75% not too long ago. And you're seeing the markets react by basically having money rotate into sectors that do better with interest rates being low, quote unquote, forever. So that would be things like your utilities, your higher yielding utilities. It would be things like real estate investment trusts, which have performed extraordinarily well. It would be things like other dividend paying companies where you can beat what you're earning on a 10-year. And also something you're seeing begin to happen in precious metals. One of the biggest reasons why gold, silver, and mining shares were suffering, you know, a few months back, it's that the markets and investors were afraid of, you know, the Fed coming in and saying, we're going to start tapering our bond buys really soon. And then after that, we're going to follow it up with imminent interest rate hikes. That kind of puts pressure on precious metals, given, you know, the threat that rising yields proposed to a 0% yield in gold bar. What we've seen more recently is that pressure come off. So what's happening? I mean, you know, very quietly, sort of behind the scenes, you know, gold and silver prices have risen from their lows of a few months back. Now we may be beginning to see, or maybe on the cusp of, a significant upside breakout and a lot of catch up to be done, so to speak, if that does happen. So long story short, I think, you know, the outlook for precious metals investors is getting better. The outlook for, you know, yield seeking, safe money income investors has been good and continues to be good. Things getting better. And I think you're going to continue to see sort of this easy money environment.
All right, Mike, well, we'll especially get into the precious metals here, but I just want to kind of refocus back on the bond market here, because yields have been dropping and it's been surprising to a lot of traders because, yeah, we are down, as we're recording this, little above 1.1% on the 10-year. And that is in the face of higher inflation data. Is the bond market telling us that inflation might be transitory? And again, I guess investors are taking some defensive positions, but it's not the same sort of defensive positions we were seeing kind of in the early part of last year after that COVID washout. So what's the balance when it comes simply to this falling yield environment?
Sure. I think you have two things going on. In the shorter term, you have concerns that, okay, this Delta, not anything like what we saw in 2020 when the economy basically shut down, but maybe some lower level of activity there. Also in the shorter term, I think you're seeing a bit more political resistance to out of control, widespread, extremely aggressive stimulus spending. I mean, yes, there's this infrastructure bill that looks like it's going to pass or it's going to hit the, and get signed by Biden before too long. So there's not as much meat on the bone there when you look behind the scenes. And I think a third thing is the longer term issue. I mean, when you continue to pile debt on top of an economy, consumer debt, corporate debt, government debt, and so on, as the principal amount that everybody goes up, it takes a smaller and smaller increase in interest rates, payments on that debt to a level that the economy just can't handle. I always kind of, say when I talk to people here in the U.S., when I grew up, my first mortgage in the early 80s, I paid 16%, 17%, and so on. Why is everybody worried about a 4% mortgage rate or a 3% mortgage rate? And I point out, you may have paid 16%, 17%, but you only borrowed $60,000, $70,000 to buy that house. So when you pay a much lower price for an asset, meaning a house, and you say you raise the interest rate a percentage point or two, it doesn't have much of a monthly payment impact. But when a house costs $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, again, given what's happened with house price inflation in the last year or two, it doesn't take a big increase in interest rates to basically make that house unaffordable. The monthly payment goes up sharply for a much smaller increase in rate. Yeah, you apply it to the government's borrowing or the corporate borrowing and so on, which has gone through the roof in the last couple of years, what does that mean? It means the economy can't handle higher rates, so we're not going to get them. I think that's a sort of a big picture sort of, another term I've seen for it out there is called Japanification, because, a country like Japan's been mired in low and zero and negative interest rates for, 2.5 decades now, going on 3? We're sort of in that same boat. Europe's sort of in that same boat. That's the big picture thing that I think everybody should keep in mind as an investor.
Mike, that's an interesting point about the Japanification. Do you think that it's a situation where the Fed really didn't want rates to get too high anyways because of the huge debt burden that they hold? So in a way, they've jawboned the market down by, putting out the idea that maybe this inflation is just transitory and trying to keep those rates in that range where they don't go too low, they don't go too high. It's kind of that Goldilocks zone. But there's also the question of where is all this bond buying coming from? And with the weakness in some of the other world markets, do you think that it's foreign investors that are actually storing or parking some of their money in U.S. markets and in bonds and treasuries just as their own safe haven?
Yeah, I think, what you hit on there at the end in terms of safe haven buying and really relative value. I mean, in the U.S., you think, 1.1%, 1.2%, whatever, who the heck wants to earn that? But compared to what you're seeing in Germany, where a 10-year yield's negative 51 basis points as of earlier this year, or this week, that looks somewhat compelling, even once you take the foreign exchange risk involved there as well. So, yeah, some of it's foreign buying, some of it's domestic buying. I mean, as you get an aging population, I always kind of say it in colloquial terms, grandma and grandpa don't want to buy a bunch of tech stocks. They want to buy things that are going to give them security. So as the U.S. population ages and other populations age in advanced economies, what are they buying? They're buying safer stuff. They're buying bonds. So there's demand coming from that. It's all of these factors combined with falling expectations for future rates. If you look at where people basically in the bond market can bet on what they think the federal funds rate is going to be in 2023, 2024, 2025, and so on, all of those future interest rate levels are dropping. That means real money is saying today, I don't think rates are going to be as high a couple years down the road because the Fed, that just doesn't make economic sense. So they're basically placing bets that will make them money if interest rates in the future are lower than they thought 3, 5, 6 months ago. So all of that stuff is going on, and I don't see that dynamic changing. So again, if you translate into what it means for your average investor, it means, again, if you own gold, silver, mining shares, whatever, you're going to get less competition from the bond market, and so that would be supportive for those prices. If you own things like, higher yielding, safe money, higher rated stocks that can, even in a potentially lower growth economy, can still support their dividend and can still, earn money, those are going to be great investments. So I don't think any of this means the stock market crashes or whatever, but I do think it means the types of stocks that outperform are going to change. And I do think it means that some of these other things that have lagged, like gold, like silver, and so on, are probably going to have their day in the sun going forward.
Yeah, let's move over to the precious metals here, because as optimistic as you are about the setup here, and it makes sense with these low interest rates, fact of the matter is, I think if you're a gold investor, or just even a generalist looking at the sector, simply at the chart saying, I don't know, this doesn't look all that great over the last year of trading. Yes, we're a bit off our lows for gold, but gold is still down almost 15% from its highs just back in August. Break down why gold has lagged in your eyes when you consider just how low rates are, and if investors are taking defensive positions, why they aren't flooding more into gold.
Sure. I think one of the big issues has been the U.S. dollar in terms of how it is also flows and has basically been moving sideways to higher for a number of months here. And I think a lot of that move in the dollar has been predicated on the idea that the Fed is going to start tapering, is going to start raising interest rates, and that U.S. rates are therefore not only going to remain raised, they're also going to increase that gap. But what's started to happen in the last couple of weeks is that the dollar has lost a little bit of steam. And if we continue to get things like the somewhat weak or the really weak ADP employment report this week and so on, if the government numbers and the ADP numbers continue to weaken from their heady levels a couple months back or a few months back, the dollar is probably going to break. And that, I think, would be the last shoe to drop for gold and silver. So if you already have falling yields, you already have lowering expectations for growth, if you also see the U.S. dollar begin to lose ground, I mean, that's kind of, again, like I said, that's sort of the last component here that could really light a fire under precious metals. So that's what I'd be watching most closely, and what I think could, help gold gain its next $100, $200 an ounce if the dollar does continue to, or does lose ground and begin to fall and retrace that move higher that we had seen for the last several months.
Well, Mike, if the dollar does roll over and continue to head down, do you believe that that'll also give the rest of the commodity sector a boost in addition to gold and silver? Could that still underpin some of the strength we've seen recently in oil and some of the base metals and even some of the food commodities and soft commodities? Do you think that those would all get a bump even further, even after having a nice run and having a slight pullback?
I think the dollar declining would definitely help lend some support there. But if the dollar is declining because all of a sudden people are worried about U.S. growth, people are worried about U.S. employment, people are worried about, fading stimulus and so on, then that's going to probably favor precious over base metals. So a lot of kind of cross currents here, a lot of ways this could break. All else being equal, a falling dollar does support other dollar-priced commodities and dollar-traded commodities. But I would think that you'd get more horsepower to the upside in precious versus base in that scenario.
How concerned, Mike, do we need to be whether you're taking defensive positions, whether you are sitting in cash or in the equity markets, that a broader pullback, that almost correction or recession or bear market that it seems like we've been waiting for over a decade in U.S. markets, how worried do we need to be that that comes and it pulls down everything?
I don't think we're in a scenario where the U.S. economy is tumbling back into recession or recession risk is rising substantially. I don't think we're on the cusp of a major break in credit markets or anything that we've seen, in past scenarios. And I think part of that is just the never-ending stimulus. I mean, even in the slightest crack, we see cracks around the edge, and what happens? Oh, there's Jay Powell on the tape talking about how he's going to roll, he's going to be there and he's got your back. And oh, there comes, another expectation that Fed tapering is going to be pushed out another 3, 4, 5, 6 months. At some point, that sort of support, those types of moves won't really support asset prices, and we'll see something uglier. But I don't see that happening imminently. I think what you're likely to see is more of the same rotational moves behind the market, people buying higher yield sectors that have more resilience in a slower growth but not recession environment. And again, things like precious metals and so on. I don't think we're on the cusp of a major deflationary, recessionary break. That may come down the road, but that's certainly not what I'm looking for, this year or probably even next year.
So, Mike, when it comes to maybe the trading in precious metals, then for those investors looking at some of the stocks, which a lot of our listeners do, are you a bit more focused on, I know you like the big guys anyway, but are you a bit more focused on those bigger stocks? Because quite frankly, even the majors and some of the bigger royalty companies have pulled back fairly significantly throughout this last year or so.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that there's probably value almost up and down the size, the food chain, so to speak. I mean, you know, you're going to see mainstream money, obviously, when it wants to buy miners, it tends to, you know, the big fund managers and so on will get into the big names first. If that trend then has horsepower, you see sort of the money filter down to the juniors and the smaller names. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be a show me environment where I think you're going to have to see the big companies, the big miners, you know, show these fund managers, hey, you can make money in this sector. And then we'll see if you get more trickle down. But yeah, I mean, that seems to be the way things work. And again, it really does depend what happens with the dollar here. Will this sort of nascent potential breakout turn into something much more powerful? And if it does, if we do break some of these important technical resistance levels, I mean, again, you could see gold up $100, $150, $200 in a pretty short period of time.
All right, final point then, Mike, when it comes to maybe portfolio management during this slow period of summer, what do you do during these summer trading sessions? Do you trim your portfolio? Do you start to get a bit more aggressive as we near the end of summer? Do you reanalyze? What's your strategy during these times?
You know, you're absolutely right in that sort of liquidity, you know, drains out of the market. There's more, it's a more sort of languid trading environment where you don't tend to see big moves. But I think if you are someone who's got some time to do the work, sit at your desk, you know, look at some, analyze some of these things that where the setups look fairly positive. I mean, again, the setups are there. And if we do see, you know, you get post Labor Day, you do get out of August, move into, you know, September or October, and some of these setups start to pan out, that's when you're going to see the big money begin to chase and, you know, really turbocharge these moves. So I think you definitely want to be adding exposure and sort of picking and choosing your spots in things that look like they have a pretty good setup, like metals, like mining shares and so on. Because if the whales and the elephants sort of come back after Labor Day and see that move, you know, gaining steam, it's really going to be pretty powerful. So, I mean, I like the setup here. I definitely think there's time for some big catch-up buying. We just need to see some of those triggers and some of those technical levels go. And that would, and again, like I said, the dollar, and that would be that would really be a good sign for a strong finish of the year.
All right, Mike, it's always great having you on the show, buddy. And I hope this kind of more broad look at the markets and positioning that we are seeing traders go into. I know that whole defensive narrative of where traders are going has been really underplayed because U.S. markets keep on touching these all-time highs. But just look at the bond market. I do think the bond market is showing us something when it comes to just how low yields have gotten, and they are still broadly in the downtrend. Mike, great chatting with you as always, buddy. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Same to you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, Shad and I are chatting with Trader Vic Sparandio. It's been a few months since I've had Trader Vic back on, and we were getting a number of emails asking for an update on Vic's thoughts on the market. So here we are. Trader Vic, I appreciate you taking the time. We have a lot of different markets to get to, and we're going to start off with inflation. Look, inflation has been all over the news. A lot of eyeballs are on every inflation data point that comes out, and the discussion or debate is remaining that inflation, is it going to be transitory or is it going to stick around? Right now, inflation numbers are running hot, but the trajectory of where inflation is going seems to have maybe petered out, almost flatlined for a little bit here, but it has flatlined at generally higher inflation levels. Trader Vic, break down for us, please, your thoughts on this whole inflation narrative that has really captured the market's attention.
Okay. Just to repeat, so that we have a premise in which we're talking and how I think is based on what inflation is. Most forecasters on TV or commentators, they believe inflation are price increases. That is the result of inflation. If I can pound the table, just just to get the record straight, inflation is purely the increase in the money supply, and the extent of the price increases come from the velocity of money. But in this case, when you talk inflation, it is nothing to do with prices. It has to do, that's the result. It has to do with what is the Fed doing. So if the Fed says it's transitory, what they're saying is the price increases will slow down. But then if you ask the question, well, how much money are you going to print? They wouldn't answer that. See, they wouldn't tell you that. They've even stopped publishing the M2 numbers as frequently as they did. So let's all understand that when I say inflation, I'm talking about what the Fed is doing to the money supply, and the extent of the price increases will be the velocity of money. In other words, if you went into a 1923 Germany scenario, that was all based on the velocity. If you come into today with the Fed, and even in the 70s, it's based on the quantity of money they're printing. So that's inflation. The results come in all forms. For example, they come in the stock market. They go into the art market. The key to where it goes is who gets the money. So if you do QE and you give it to, let's say you gave $100 billion to Warren Buffett, I mean, he's not going to go out and buy cars and things. He's going to put it in the market. So you'll see the money that he gets will push up stock prices. So just to be clear on that, I just want to make that well known. Now, the second part of this that's important is you don't look at the year-over-year number. The year-over-year number is 5.4. This is what most people talk about. That's absurd to look at that because you're comparing prices that were in the pandemic lows, the depression lows, if you want to call it that, that were created by governors mainly. And so now that's gone. Way to look at inflation is you take the monthly numbers, you add them together. For example, this year, it's the last reported numbers of 6 months. They average 6.8. So then you multiply that by 12. So you take the average months, add them up, divide by the amount, multiply it by 12. You're dealing with an 8.4% inflation rate. That's the actual way to read it, not year over year. Year over year is interesting, but it has no meaning on what's going on. What's going on are these monthly changes. And of course, the CPI is bogus too. So, I mean, you're never going to get an accurate reading. But if you want a semi-realistic look at what they're trying to calculate using the CPI, you got to use the monthlies and then annualize the monthlies in the current period, whatever period you want to use. But year over year has no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah, Trader Vic, it's interesting because when we saw QE start back at the Great Financial Crisis, people were saying there was no inflation, even though there was massive money printing, because there really wasn't that velocity of money. But over the last year or so, with the massive spending programs and helicopter money and sending checks to people directly and the payment protection plan for small businesses, we've seen that M2 and the circulation of money increase. And then, like you're saying, the result is the pricing. But how do you think that's affecting the safe haven market? So the bonds and gold and where people are rotating the money, because it looks like we're still seeing lower interest rates. But if you look at your monthly calculation, the way you just figured it, between 6 to 8% inflation is definitely inflation. So it seems silly to jump into bonds and have a negative real return. And one would think this would boost gold. So how do you see the setup in interest rates and gold?
Well, understand that the bond market is being manipulated, so you don't know what real interest rates are for the long bond because they're being purchased by the Fed and part of that $120 billion a month that they buy. The key is inflation, and remember now, when I talk about the money supply, okay, I'm not talking about prices. Inflation is going to be temperate, and in this case, Powell is effectuating his own call And this is where these reverse repos come in. See, I go back to the 70s, early 70s. Nobody even knew what the Fed funds rate was then. But the key is that a reverse repo is taking money out of the system. The last number I saw was $1 trillion. So if you take $120 billion that the Fed is buying each month, you multiply it by 6 months, the last recorded, let's say, the amount that is they've done July now, so it'd be about $840 billion. But they just did a reverse repo at the end of last week, which was $1 trillion. So you're taking out $1 trillion by effectively these reverse repo means I'm selling securities, meaning the Fed, I'm getting cash. So you're taking cash out of the system, you're reducing liquidity. Now, just to make a point, if you look, you can Google FRED, Fred, that's the St. Louis Fed, and then put in reverse repos, you'll get a chart. If you look carefully at that chart, there was a little spike up in May, and then it retracted a little bit, and then it went above the previous high, using chart terms here. That was the end of where commodities started to rally, because they saw what people like me are sensitive to what the Fed is doing in their balance sheet, but they're also sensitive to what they're doing in what they call their operations. In this case, the reverse repo is part of operations. So if you look at that, for example, you'll see May 7th is when these reverse repos started to accelerate. And what Powell was doing then was trying to appease the markets by saying, okay, we do care about inflation, but we can't do anything that's obvious about it, meaning we can't raise rates and we're not going to taper, because too many people are following that now, it would disturb the equity market. So if you look, however, at most commodity markets, many, I'll say many, not most, copper being a very good guy. Copper is probably the best lead indicator of any of the commodities. Copper peaked the same time that you see the reverse repo rate go above the early May highs. So that was an indication that the Fed is draining money. So in inflation, again, using money supply, they're taking money out of the system. Inflation will be less. Price increases, in this case, are a lag, and they will also be tempered. But I would say, if you wanted to look at, you know, what the rates are going to be using the CPI, they're going to be in the 3 to 4s. So they're going to come down from this 8.4 level that they're trading at in the last 6 months. They're going to come down to the 3 or 4 point level, percent level, for, let's say, starting in the last quarter. Because there's a lag. There's always a lag in these prices. So I'm just trying to get this, that there will be a tempering of inflation because the Fed is taking money out of the system. It's taken more money out of the system than it's put in. You see what I mean? It's gonna contract. So he's making his own wish come true, but it's not obvious.
So Trader Vic, doesn't this mean that the Fed has the most control, a lot of the control when it comes to inflation, if it is simply about velocity of money and if the Fed's actually putting money into the markets or taking it out? It sounds like, from what you're saying, the Fed has control over this.
Of course, 100% control. As Milton Friedman said, that in every respect, inflation is a monetary phenomenon. I mean, it's so simple, but really, it's so confusing to most people, because commentators always use, and you'll hear this phrase, you know, inflation is rising. They're talking about prices, but they're not talking about the money supply. If you, I'm going to really make this simple. I don't want to dwell on this more than this one point. Let's say you have 10 people. They all have $1,000. You're on an island. All of a sudden, somebody prints up $10,000 and gives it to everybody equally, let's say $10,000 per person. What would happen to the prices of things on the island? They would go up. Why? Because you've just increased the money supply 1,000%. So, I mean, you see, it's that simple. It's all about the money. It's all about how much money you're printing. It has nothing to do with the effects of that, which are rising prices. And they go to, again, as I say, whoever gets the money. it depends who you're giving the money to. So I just want to stress that because, again, it's so confusing. And when I hear this on TV, it makes me shrug. But anyway, so inflation is going to be tempered starting probably in August. I mean, the August reported numbers. July should be fairly strong still because of this lag. But in August, it's going to start to decline. Again, you're looking at the monthly rates. They're going to be 3 to 4 is what, instead of 8 or 7. So that's going to help stocks, and it's going to help bonds, and bonds reflect this. They understand what's going on. Anybody that's my age, you know, that's been trading forever understands, you look at the Fed operations. What are they doing? Most people don't even know what a reverse repo is. I hear, they think it's like repos, that's most of the definitions I hear coming out of the TV. So in any respect, but it is that simple. So now that's one of the main reasons why you don't see gold and silver moving. Because again, that if you see bad news, for example, economic news, you'll see gold and silver rally, because that would mean that the Fed has got to start to print more money, so they respond to that. If you get good news, gold and silver sell off because it means Fed doesn't have to do more printing. And that's been the phenomenon. The most puzzling to most is why gold and silver hasn't moved up. But when the Fed started to do reverse repos, now that's in May. They should have rallied earlier, but again, they manipulated as well. And what the Fed doesn't want, they don't want you looking at gold and silver rising because they want to keep inflation expectations down. And again, inflation expectations here is rising prices in this case.
Well, Trader Vic, we hear that gold is, the ultimate inflation hedge. We also hear that the energy market, something like oil, is a good inflation hedge. And that gets a lot of lip service, and then people come out on the other side and bash gold and say, hey, it's not really an inflation that it hasn't done well. But we have seen massive money supply the last 10 years, we haven't seen the capital flows, roll into commodities and roll into, many other sectors, and really till the last year or so, but they've consistently gone into the general markets. Do you expect those trends to change at all? Couldn't gold also go up not just because of crisis, but also because of monetary policy?
Okay, just for the record, okay, again, I'm a stickler for numbers, all right? Ending 2017, December 31st, 2017, if you go back as your number, 10 years, the CPI headline rate was 161. In order to find a 10-year rate lower than that, you'd have to go back to 1955. See, starting in 55, you had a 1.55 rate in 10 years. Ending 17, you got 161. The last couple of years, you're up to 170, 172. And the last year, it's about 180 odd, the high eights. So inflation, if you're measuring it by the CPI, which is a very poor measure, by the way, because it's manipulated, too. It's controlled by the government. So they put in what they want. They take out what they want. They use hedonics. I mean, they make it whatever they want. But in respect, you haven't seen headline inflation in the last, since, if you want to call it, since Trump was elected, because they have basically manipulated down gold and silver and interest rates. And how did they do that? Interest rates starting 2/11 October, they started to pay the Fed on reserves. What does that mean? That means they were paying the banks not to loan money. Where do you get inflation? You get inflation from velocity primarily, big inflation. But if you're paying banks not to loan money and you're giving them interest rate factor that is equal to what they would give out to the marketplace, but without any risk, because there is no risk. I mean, you notice that the bank loans have dropped off a great deal if you go back and you look at history. So because they were paying interest on reserves, they've canceled the way inflation would normally operate, because they didn't want inflation. Why? Because they want the equity markets up. Equity markets go up when you have zero low interest rates and basically no inflation. So they manufactured that. I have to hand it to the guy at the Fed that thought of that. But that's what happened. And that, with Dodd-Frank, canceled many of the rules that allowed institutions, pension funds in particular, to buy commodity futures. Now, this is my business. I guarantee you that happened because it hurt my business, so I investigated it, so that's true. But now, when you pour money into some money supply, as the Fed has recently done, and Fed is, and the government spending, you've got this nominal rate up to where now, as I say, because the Fed did pay attention to that, and they've taken that into account, but they're not telling you that. You just got to look at their actions. They don't want the market to think they're tightening, because then the stock market would come down. You see my point?
Absolutely. So, Trader Vic, where does that leave us then? What's your outlook for, let's say, the rest of this year into 2022 in terms of what markets you think, whether manipulated or not, have some of the best upside, or some, or are simply some of the strongest?
Okay, well, let me just say, I'm an investor in gold and silver, meaning I've owned it long term, and I sort of add to the positions as time goes on. I very rarely sell. But the point is, so I'm talking a bit out of position. To me, gold and silver are the most undervalued assets in the world still, because you base gold and silver on the fact of that it's money, and you're using this fiat money. The more you increase the fiat money, the more valuable the real money is, because you can't print it. You have to go find it and dig it up, and it's costly. So I believe that investment-wise, gold and silver is great, but not in the near term. The near term, even though I own it, I'm talking opposed to my book now. So you basically will have that as your best long-term investments, because they're undervalued and they're being held down by banks. 8 banks are short gold and silver futures. Now, you go to the equity markets, they can only go up. Why do I say that? Because the government wants it up. That the owner of the Fed are very wealthy people. So you cater to your masters. So as long as the Fed's policy is, we're not going to raise rates until 2023, we want this because we want to win the 2022 elections, they're not going to let the market fall. Now, the only thing that the risk here for the markets, because they're way overvalued, is an event that takes place that the Fed can't control. The example, the greatest risk, is China taking Taiwan. That happens, you're going to wake up to a very bad day, okay, if that happens. But the Fed can't do anything about that. So if China decides to take Taiwan, which, by the way, is more and more possible because Biden is a weak president. So if I'm Xi Jinping, I would basically be planning to do that before the elections. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying that's the risk. That's what you have to look at as big risk. And there, the equity markets would crash in a big, big way. So there's your risk. You want to be long, the stuff that's going up. The problem is you're buying an overvalued asset. You want to be long the stuff that's not going up, which is silver and gold since last August, but it's got the greatest value, meaning it's going to hold. Remember, right now I would say that because of the inflation, producing gold, for example, is probably $13 to $13.50 an ounce. So if you ever got down to $13, $13.50 an ounce, production would stop. So you'd have now a scarcity of the metals, which would then be, that's where the support would come in, because it's 2 and 2, right? If you're going to spend more money, less money, if you're going to get less money for what you have to pay to produce it, you stop. So my point is that that's kind of the essence of those two markets. The bond markets are manipulated. So where they're going to allow those markets to go to free positions, probably under the China scenario, because they couldn't control. People be either coming into the bonds and going out of bonds. It depends on what the U.S. reaction is to the taking of Taiwan. Stocks would go down. Bonds are up in the air. I don't know. because it's looked at as, you know, if you want to be a defense on the defense, you buy U.S. bonds. So many people would, many foreigners would. The key that everybody should watch carefully is the dollar. Now, the dollar is also manipulated because they've got this called the Interest Stabilization Fund, or I'm not pronouncing it exactly correct. It's a $100 billion fund that was created years ago, and basically it's there to keep the dollar stable. So it's bought and sold like anything else. There is no free markets anymore. They're all manipulated.
All right, Trader Vic, we're going to wrap it up on that point. Manipulation everywhere. But unfortunately, those are just the markets we are in. Trader Vic, it's great having you on the show. Always interesting to hear your takes on what's driving these markets and even where you think people should be looking at in terms of undervalued investments. Trader Vic, thanks again for your time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Pleasure, Corey. Thank you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. Because we recorded the first three segments a bit earlier in the week, I wanted to save this last segment in the first hour to recap what happened on Friday. Because after that jobs number, boy oh boy, we saw some important market moves, especially, I think, in the gold market. We will get to that later on in this interview. Shad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Mark, let's recap that jobs data. So the data, 100,000 jobs approximately, better than what was estimated. The payroll number grew in July by 943,000 jobs. This brought down the unemployment rate to 5.4%. Look, this number really was taken positively by the markets, by investors, and by news sources. And when you dive into it, I think understandably so. We saw some wage growth more in the lower wage area, so that doesn't really contribute too much to higher inflation. And well, again, across the board, we had another beat over the estimate. This is almost 2 months in a row now that the jobs data is showing that the U.S. economy is maybe stronger than a lot of the bears want to admit right now. And that also carries over the whole narrative to, is the Fed going to taper a little bit earlier than some expect, maybe even this year? Mark, first, summarize this jobs data. What was your takeaway from it, please?
And I agree with you. The jobs data was strong. It was the second month in a row over 900,000 jobs created, talking 943,000 in July after a revised 938,000 in June. You know, you get above 900,000, I think we have to consider this like a million jobs being created, which is as much as people could reasonably have expected, I think. And like you say, some of the underlying details were also constructive, manufacturing jobs, the hourly earnings, the unemployment rate, the underemployment rate fell from 9.8% to 9.2%. If there was one small sort of exception, it would really be where did the fact that the U.S. jobs grew more than expected, where was that growth? And it turns out that growth, about 240,000, came from the government sector. The private sector added 703,000 jobs, which is still a very strong number, though not quite as strong as June. So that's the only sort of nitpicky issue there. But I think that the takeaway is that the Federal Reserve is on path to taper. I think that the Jackson Hole symposium at the end of August is still in play for a strong hint of tapering. And I think that we get a more formal announcement at the September FOMC meeting when there's going to be new forecasts available, a new dot plot as well.
Well, Mark, one takeaway I see today on Friday is that it seemed to take some of the moves that were already in motion and just act as an accelerant. The lower unemployment rate, the good jobs data, the payroll numbers because you noticed that the rates were already kind of bouncing midweek and they've continued to bounce higher. The dollar was already kind of bouncing midweek and it's bounced higher. And gold was already a little under pressure earlier in the week and it's continued lower today. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, the U.S. 10-year yield bottomed on Wednesday about 1.125%. And it recovered on Wednesday and finishing the week near just below 130. And similarly, in the currency markets, we saw the same kind of thing. You look at what happened on Wednesday after the U.S. yields bottomed. The dollar index put in a reversal where it traded on both sides of Tuesday's range and then closed above Tuesday's high. Not much follow through yesterday, but a lot of follow through today to the upside. And I think that there's not really much stopping us from testing last month's high, which came in just above 93, almost 93.20. And then the year's high on the dollar index was set at the end of March, about 93.45. So I think that we tried testing the dollar's downside. The euro traded exactly at 119 on Wednesday, and then it too reversed lower. We've seen almost all the major currencies. We saw important price action, either a reversal pattern, an outside trading day on Wednesday, and the dollar is finishing the week, actually, basically not at its best levels for the week, and some currencies even better than that. And so it does look to me like you're right that the jobs data pushed on an open door. Bond yields were already rising. We had some hawkish comments from Fed officials, the market thought, and we had this stronger jobs data, which sort of reinforces that, all pushing bond yields higher, the dollar higher, and gold lower.
So is this a trend, at least when it comes to, well, actually all three of these, we can encompass it all in one question, where is it too early to say that the dollar is in a more sustainable uptrend, or that yields truly have bottomed and they're in a more sustainable uptrend? And then on to gold. Gold was already trending lower. Gold's been trending lower for a year now and just got whacked on Friday.
Yeah, I have been more negative to the dollar, thinking that the twin deficits are going to come back and haunt it. In recent days, we've seen a record U.S. trade deficit, monthly trade deficit, a little bit more than $75 billion. And that didn't stop the dollar from rallying. The bond, when the yields were down at 112 on the 10-year, the dollar was still pretty firm. It hadn't really, it lost, you know, it was softer, but it wasn't, it was at the sort of the lower end of the range, but still in the range. And so I think that it's giving me some concern that at least in the near term, we still have potential for further dollar gains. I'm concerned, I guess, if there's some things that would change my mind. I'd like to see next week's CPI data. I'm sure a lot of other people would like to see it early too. But I think that it could be the first month since last October that the year-over-year rate softens. So that's one. And the second point I'd have is that I see all these signs of countries, states in the U.S., municipalities taking action over this Delta variant, and it's going to lead to, I think, some economic impact. It's hard to see it in the U.S. quite yet, though we do know that many of the large companies are postponing, delaying when they return to office. We see that schools in New York, at least, will be having students will have to be wearing masks. And other countries like Sydney in Australia, for example, Sydney have been in lockdown for several weeks, and they are still seeing record number of cases. Same thing in Japan. Other countries in Asia, including China, where they seem to have a handle on the virus, now it's growing again, and lockdowns and other social restrictions. So I'm still concerned that we're not quite out of the woods yet, and I'm not sure how that plays in the dollar. At least initially, the dollar had strengthened on ideas that there was going to be renewed sort of anxiety over the COVID, slowing the world economy, a flight to safe haven. And that's when we saw the yen and the Swiss franc also trade well. You know, this week, dollar yen had fallen we had gotten down to the yen well below the 109 level and actually bottomed at almost a 2-month low, near 108.70. And now, last couple of days, we've also gone back as U.S. yields have risen. And so even the other safe haven currencies or funding currencies have trading a bit heavier against the dollar this week.
Mark, you bring up the safe haven currencies there. But just in general, as far as the safe havens, you know, if there was a slowdown in the economy and states do start locking down like they are in other countries, you would think there'd be more of a flight to safety in gold. But instead, gold's mostly getting pummeled on the rate increases and the dollar increase. You had put out a public target a couple times in your articles and even on the show of around 1750. How do you see the setup in gold now? Do you think it'll continue to trend lower, or do you think that there will be a safe haven bid that comes in if we get a slowdown in the reflation trade?
Yeah, no, I'm sort of stuck in a way, you know. I thought 1750. I thought that's where we could finish the year as well, but it looks to me like we're going to be going through that. A lot of momentum. I think a lot of people frustrated. Seems to me that when I look at the price action itself, in the last couple of weeks, there's been almost a triple top carved out, say 1830, 1835, and triple top is in some ways a derivative of the head and shoulders top. And I would project that to go back to, you're looking at something close to that 1750 level, and to encourage me for that test. But also below there, maybe it's the 1735. But, you know, I don't see a lot, especially if you were to tell me that U.S. yields will continue to recover with the tapering, strong jobs data, that the low we made for the year was around 1675. Back in early March, and that seems to be the bolder call is to retest the lows on the back of a stronger dollar and rising U.S. yields.
When you take a step back, Mark, regarding gold, doesn't it seem like everything is going against gold right now? Maybe outside of inflation, at least inflation is still staying high. But if the dollar's recovering, if yields have bottomed, and one thing to consider, even when yields were moving down fairly quickly and inflation was moving higher, that wasn't helping gold. So now with this potential change in trend, I don't know what's there in terms of an argument to say you need to be in gold right now, other than, let's say, it's undervalued because it's underperformed everything else. But that's a tough argument or a tough trade to make, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that the idea, too, would be that it is a big move in gold. The momentum indicators tell you that it looks like I got ways to a little bit more to go, at least. I'd be looking for some kind of reversal pattern before I try to pick a bottom here. Something that tells you that the downside momentum has stalled. I think there's a lot of people looking at the large U.S. debt. And, you know, in the next couple of days, the U.S. Senate is going to likely pass the infrastructure bill. It might take the House of Representatives another month, come back from recess and address it. But with all this spending, I thought that some people like gold. The crypto wasn't performing the way many people thought. I had sort of like, talk with people who seem to think that gold would be a good place to hang out as paper money was debased. But it turns out that not quite a great store of value right now.
So, Mark, what about the U.S. equity markets? Because, look, it feels like every couple of days we read a new headline about why markets are moving to all-time highs. And it doesn't really matter what that headline is. It could be that jobs data that was released on Friday. It could also be a rotation of money or better earnings in some of the maybe lagging sectors. Look, everything's been used as an excuse as to why U.S. markets continue to hit all-time highs. It seems like the markets are kind of ignoring a lot of the news, a lot of the data, and quite frankly, just keep on moving higher. Maybe that is because so much money still is getting put into the markets, but we just had somebody on last segment that was saying that the Fed is actually removing money or liquidity. What do you think is continuing to drive U.S. markets to all-time highs?
Yeah, no, it's quite remarkable, huh? And I think that that's partly what makes it difficult for people who are so close to the markets to be committing more money to it at these kind of levels, these kind of valuations, at least without much of a pullback. I don't know. I mean, I still think that there's not much of an alternative to stocks for most savers. We're still talking about less than 1.3% on a 10-year bond yield, which means if the Fed achieves its inflation target, you're going to lose purchasing power. And so in some ways, it's a bet against the Fed. So I don't know. I still see the VIX still trading, not an extreme level. It's trading about 16 and a half today. Before the weekend, we're sort of in the middle of the range. Maybe that there's still some scope here. I don't know. I don't have a good sense of like the real driver here. I just see a lot of money seeing not much of an alternative for a lot of retail and small institutional money.
All right, so Mark, let's wrap it up on the concept of as we move away from this week and a bit closer to the end of summer. What are the key trends to note here, to be watching, to maybe give us some insights into how the rest of this year will play out?
I think three key factors. One is not just the Delta mutation, but there's other mutations behind it that we're beginning to, you know, that they've monitored and are sort of doing the DNA sequencing for. And I have to just the way this is like a wager between like our species and how clever Mother Nature is. And I'm concerned about the next variant and the variant after that one, especially given the large number of people, not just, say, in the United States, but large numbers of people in the world who aren't vaccinated, which is really the host for where these mutations are going to come from. So I'd say the evolution of the virus. Second thing is, what happens to what the Federal Reserve does. And here I think that the battle is between the hawks that are looking to remove some liquidity to begin tapering this year, perhaps October, November, and the doves that want to wait until next year to do it, make the announcements, prepare the markets now, but wait till next year to do it. And I think that's going to evolve partly over the issue of the strength of the labor market. We'll still have another jobs report before the Fed meets in September. And we still got the Jackson Hole at the end of August. And the third big factor, I think, how the year is going to wind down is what's going on in China. China is the world's second largest economy. As you know, it's a huge buyer of commodities. And they have taken, Beijing has been on an offensive now that seems to me not fully understandable yet, but what it looks like is sort of a crackdown on the what I would call the Chinese bourgeoisie, the private sector businesses, monopolies that were growing, things that could compete with the government, such as the Alipay and Ant, financial services that China has cracked down on. And then what this means for the Chinese economy, you know, the bond yield fell this week to a new lows, a new one-year lows, around 2.8% of their 10-year yield. The stock market, even though it closed higher on the week, sort of wobbling. And I'd say that a lot of foreign investors have lightened up. And so many people suspect the Chinese government might have used its resources to help support the stock market. So those are the three big key factors. Trying to get a handle on what China is doing, pace of the Fed, and the third thing, of course, is the virus itself.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. Great chatting with you, as always, buddy. Again, you can keep up to date on what Mark is thinking and the markets he's following day to day by visiting the Mark to Market blog. Everybody, it's been a great time putting on this weekend show with you. Again, throughout the week, we did focus on a lot of company interviews because I think right now in these usually slow markets outside of what happened on Friday, especially in gold, good time to reanalyze your portfolio and make sure you're invested in the stocks that have the best work programs, the best chance of running throughout the rest of this year. Mark, everybody else, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.